So I don't think we've mentioned who was in the majority. In the majority, Barrett wrote it. She was joined by Kavanaugh, the chief. Kagan. Kagan. Jackson and Sotomayor. And so the dissent was Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch. And what did they have to say, Janine?
Well, they thought the majority got it wrong, which is shocking. First of all, they found that plaintiffs had standing, as they should have, for the reasons we've sort of discussed. They also reached the merits and said this clearly violated the First Amendment, the government's conduct here. I thought that Alito was much more familiar with the record. It was very clear than Barrett.
He really seemed particularly. He focused on Jill Hines. He didn't do everybody, but he said you only need one in order to have standing. I'm going to focus on Jill Hines and focus on Facebook. And here's all the data from the record on Jill Hines and Facebook, and that's enough. You do all this. You have traceability. You have redressability. You got the whole nine yards. No standing problem for Jill Hines. I thought it was very powerful.
Yeah, I thought so too.
And so Jill, just to remind you all, she runs a health outfit down in Louisiana, and she comments on forced vaccines and all this kind of thing, shutdowns. And it is clear that her messages were the type of messages that the CDC didn't want under the Trump administration, and they certainly didn't want it as soon as Biden came in. And they were exactly the kind of messages that the government was pressuring people to take off. And what Barrett's saying is, I don't care if it's the kind of message they're trying, because maybe they were going to do it themselves. And they really seem focused on the timeline in the majority. And the timeline in the majority was, well, you were downgraded before Biden said anything. And our complaint and the facts in this matter are that it started from the government doing this before the Biden administration. This wasn't – we filed it against the Trump administration. That's not true. We filed it against the Biden administration for Trump policies.
Some agencies. Although, to be clear, I don't think they were acting at the direction of the White House, unlike the agencies under Biden.
During the Trump administration, a lot of people weren't.
Fair enough.
So I think.
But, this does give me hope for our other case, Dressen, because that's about vaccine-injured people who were kicked off of their Facebook and other social media groups. A lot of it was for private conversations where they were talking about their injuries and just seeking, to commiserate, and also for medical advice from other people who were in the same situation.
And it's an ongoing harm because they keep shutting down the groups every time they try to regroup them.
Yeah, and it's there were actually explicit demands made by Rob Flaherty and I believe also Andy Slavitt in the White House to shut those groups down. They said that, these groups are just creating anti-vax sentiment, get them off. And then and our timeline, I think, is pretty clear there. So those plaintiffs might actually be able to overcome this hurdle.
And what Alito said, and I did think it he went through all of that. The next hurdle, the one we haven't mentioned, though, is future harm. And Barrett says COVID's over. For you people, COVID's over. Nobody's going to do anything about COVID. No one will ever bother you again about COVID. And so there's no chance of future harm.
Well, the vaccine groups are still shut down.
Hines sent me something today showing that she'd been censored again for that. And also, this wasn't just about COVID misinformation. It was about the election and Hunter Biden laptop.
Hunter Biden laptop. You think that's relevant between now and November?
And there's another election I heard coming up. So
that part.
But there's nobody named Biden or Trump in that election, is there? I don't think. Oh, shoot.
So and this. This is really a big deal. It doesn't affect our clients as much, but it certainly affects our co-plaintiffs, Jim Hoft and Louisiana and
Question. Are Louisiana and Missouri going to be able to – is there an argument to be made that they might be able to get the discovery they need to establish standing, or are we going to have to
– No, they're just going to have to show why their tweets were knocked down. Remember, they were thrown off too, and they still want to talk.
True.
So – but what I really think, though, is on that laptop issue, it's an issue right now. Miranda Devine just wrote an article that somehow that the CIA was responsible for this. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know it's going to cause a ruckus. And the fact of the matter is that the real danger here, and some people have noted this, is that they've made it harder for individuals to protect their First Amendment rights. There's no question it's more difficult because you can't get an injunction. You have to go through the whole case and then win or lose on – and then maybe you'll get a statement. But
no damages.
Yeah. But the other thing that's going on here is that they've just given a pathway, a whole roadmap. All right, if you want to affect the election, what type of messages are on social media are hurting your reelection? And you have every agency call up Facebook and Twitter and maybe the Chinese over at TikTok, whoever it is, and you say, I want this off. Take this down. I'll take off your 230 protections. I won't help you when the Europeans are trying to overregulate you, which was brilliant by Alito, by the way. I had forgotten that. That had never been top of mind, even though I know it. So because the government can do that unilaterally. The executive can do that foreign protection of American companies by itself, doesn't need congressional help, and it cannot do it, which can lose you billions, if not trillions of dollars. So it's huge threats. They are now given a green light to threaten away.
Yeah.
And if there is no I will say this. There may be somebody in Silicon Valley who will say, I don't want to get pushed around anymore. They're pushing me around to do this, and I'm only doing it because they're pushing me around.
Yeah. Does his name rhyme with Musk?
Maybe. But it might be other people by now. I have to say that, you know, might be other people, but certainly him. And yeah. So the fact of the matter is they've made this very difficult to do, but, you know, maybe it'll open up – maybe it'll open up the third parties to start talking.
One of my gripes with this case is if they were going to decide this on standing – and they were going to decide that our clients, the individual plaintiffs, did not have standing, they should have allowed the attorneys for the individual plaintiffs to speak at oral argument.
Well,
we sought separate argument in the case, and the court turned it down.
Yeah. You know what? I did ask for that, and I asked for it 6 days after the period was out. We don't know why, but it's very curious because Jim Hoft said, John, you can go do it. Go, you know. So we would, and I was looking into, you know, what is the trade? What is everything? And the court waited and waited. I had to wait to get Louisiana and Missouri's consent, and that's why the delay came. But when I got everyone's consent, everyone agreed, and the government didn't oppose. So all the parties were like, yeah, let them talk. And the Supreme Court, their orders came out on Monday, and then it wasn't there. And I called up the clerk. I'm like, it was like something like 13, 14 days before argument. And they wouldn't – and they finally released it on a Wednesday or something. It was strange. Yeah. Something went on there.
Something went on there, and I don't know what it is. And you know, I don't want to cast aspersions at the Solicitor General of Louisiana today, but I do want to say that he was not the person in the best position to speak to the standing of the individual plaintiffs. I mean he's just not. He wasn't the one who represented them, yeah. And he wasn't the one who was the most familiar with the depositions that they gave or the attestations that they made and what have you. And so if you're going to decide this case on standing, then damn it,
of Supreme Jill Court, Hines.
Yeah. Of Jill Hines, then let Jill Hines' attorney speak to you at oral argument to answer whatever questions you have about her standing.
Yes, yeah. that's exactly right. And I mean, this was an enormous record. It was over 20,000 pages. And I thought it was funny that Justice Barrett said at the end of her opinion that, well, you're asking us to read this huge record to see if we should uphold this injunction. Basically, like, we're not going to do that. So it was clear.
But that's an old saying. So everyone's been trying to get the truffle pig in a Supreme Court ruling, and they finally did. This is the thing that the court doesn't have to go search around. You're supposed to do it. But with all the amicus pointing out all this, because we only had a certain amount of pages, we pointed out a lot. But I also just want to say the last bit. When they said that Darity made mistakes on the facts, she pointed out three things in a footnote. And I just – there were three things in this whole record of his 100-and-some-odd page thing that she doesn't believe are supported by the record. So clearly erroneous. So they're clearly erroneous, but the three things she cited, given how much is in the record and what Alito said, reminds me of the Georgetown joke about the Jesuit who's accused of killing 10 men and a dog and produces the dog alive. That footnote is the dog alive and has nothing about the 10 dead men. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable and I think disingenuous a little bit. I think that was disappointing. I will say, if I'm going to say something positive here, that – no, actually, let me not do that.
I'm about to say, why should you break with tradition?
Yeah, well, no. The other thing that the court was a little disingenuous about was the fact that a lot of the statements were true statements, especially by Dr. Bhattacharya and Dr. Kohldorf and Dr. Cariotti. These were true factual statements that were taken down off the internet at the behest of the government, that the government was the one that was spreading misinformation. And this majority opinion completely elides that.
And the dissent brings it up very strongly and says it a lot. And the reason they don't do it, though, is because in these standing – I'll tell you this. In these standing arguments, they don't want to show you how bad the problem is. And they say that's reaching the merits. So the reason the majority doesn't mention that is because it shows how the bad results of their decision – and they don't want to engage on the merits because that is a disaster.
And the good thing I was going to say is, even despite this, Janine, because you brought this lawsuit, all of this has been exposed. Yeah. This wouldn't have been exposed without this lawsuit and without Eric Schmidt, the Attorney General of Missouri, is the one who originated it, right?
Yeah.
And then we brought the individual plaintiffs to the party.
A lot of people have been saying, you know, that the real victory lay in the discovery. And people who are pretty familiar with this think that the companies might have backed off a little bit from the censorship and the government may have because of this.
Yeah, during this time now.
Yeah,
But I will say this. The big winner of this decision is Andrew Grossman. And I'll tell you why.
I know why.
Why, Mark?
No. Actually, I know why for Jarkissi. I don't know why for Murthy.
Oh, for Murthy, because he has this idea that Congress should pass a law that all contacts with social media companies have to be recorded. And the problem here is transparency. And he has created a bill for transparency so you'll know who the government's talking to and what they're saying to them if you're taken down. And so he has been making sort of a model First Amendment social media push. And it's an ill wind that blows no one any good. We'll be back next week.
Unless we're censored.